Great. I think you should go to bed. Sleep it off. He stepped closer and I could clearly smell it. He'd been drinking whiskey, but the way he was acting, there was no way he was just drunk. Something else was intoxicating him.
It's just amazing. You were always pretty, but he made you.
His voice trailed off and he shook his head, reaching out a hand to thumb my chin. I jerked away from his touch.
Let's just say I can see why he was so quick to claim you as his own.
Dale, stop. You're being creepy. I tried to sound firm, pushing my fist into his chest to put space between us. He only stepped closer, wrapping his fingers around my wrist. For some reason, that simple move violated me more than his words. I only wanted Rhodes' fingers on my wrist.
You really want to go see him tonight, don't you?
I nodded, swallowing a sandpaper-covered cotton ball as he leaned even closer. He was squeezing my wrist with enough force to make my nerves jump to life. Something was wrong, and I realized at that very moment I was scared of my stepdad.
Well, I can let you go and not tell your mother, he said, and though those words should have brought me relief, they only made me shake in his grip. His next sentence proved my fear to be warranted. But you'll have to do something for me.
He grinned wider, licking his bottom lip as his eyes fell to mine. Bile rose in my throat, and I couldn't hide the horror that quickly appeared on my face. Oh my God, Dale! I tried to shove him away, but he only grabbed my other wrist, and now he had both of them in a tight grip. My heart pounded in my ears. He was serious. Oh God, he was serious. A mixture of fear and disgust rolled through me, and I jerked my arms with as much force as I could, but it barely fazed him. My muscles were exhausted, and Dale was stronger. It didn't take me long to realize the sickening implication behind those two facts. Dale, please let me go, I cried, tugging my arms again. He shoved me back hard against the door, knocking the wind from my chest. Wide-eyed and shaking, I flexed my knee forward and connected with his groin. Dale coughed and bent forward, but kept his grip on my wrists. I squirmed against his grasp, trying to wriggle free as he strained to catch his breath again, but I was trapped, and when he lifted his head again, his dark eyes were venomous. He released one of my wrists long enough to rear back and slap my face. The force hurled me to the ground, and I hit the hardwood floor with a smack. Groaning, I grabbed my head between my hands, trying to stop my vision from spinning. Pain echoed through my skull as I tried to focus on the legs of our coffee table across the room. I blinked over and over, but the room kept sliding from the left to the right in my vision. I squeezed my eyes tight, willing my head to settle, praying the dizziness would pass. Dale dropped down on top of me, pinning my wrists above my head. My chest was tight, my breaths labored. I felt the panic setting in, and I couldn't think straight. Shaking my head wildly, I thrashed against his grip, my eyes wide, vision still blurred. "Dale, stop, please!" I screamed for Mom, but that only made him laugh. He knew as well as I did that she was passed out, and not even my screaming was going to wake her. When a sickening snarl curled on his lip, I realized this was how he liked it. He wanted me to fight. He wanted me to struggle. I swallowed back the acid rising in my throat, squeezing my eyes tight again. This isn't happening. This isn't happening.
God, you smell so good,
Dale whispered, inhaling a deep breath against my neck. I squeezed my eyes tighter as hot tears leaked out from each one. I focused on them as they seared a trail from my cheeks to my ears. When I felt Dale fidgeting with the spandex band of his sweatpants, my eyes snapped open. I bucked against him, thrashing, kicking, screaming, crying. A rush of adrenaline had sparked to life, and I tried so hard to help it catch fire. I tried to headbutt him, to knee him again, but every attempt was futile. My muscles wouldn't cooperate, and Dale wouldn't budge. "Dale," I groaned, tears streaming, throat aching. "God, please, please stop. Please, please." I said the word over and over, praying to his humanity or God or whoever would listen first. "Shh," he whispered, touching his finger to my lips as his other hand still held my wrists firmly in place. I shook my head against the touch.
"Just relax." I choked on a sob, writhing beneath him. My heart was pounding in my ears. It was beating so fast, too fast. I was going to pass out. I was sure of it. My eyes fluttered open, the beat growing louder and louder in my ears. Dale was still saying something, but I couldn't make it out anymore. Everything was muted, vision still like a dream, or rather, a nightmare. I simply stared up at the chandelier, watching it shimmer and glitter like the horrific scene just beneath it wasn't real. Like I wasn't real. Like I didn't exist. Everything was in slow motion. Time was morphing. Inhale, exhale. Dale's hand slid up my inner thigh and two more tears slid down to join the puddles forming in my ears. A cry left my lips, but I didn't hear it. I didn't hear anything. I didn't smell or feel or taste. I only saw through blurred, distorted vision, the chandelier. The chandelier was all that existed. Something broke the edges of my vision, but still no sound came. There was commotion, muffled voices and screams pierced through the barrier. I blinked. Dale was off of me. I blinked again, still the chandelier. I blinked once more. Rhodes. All of my senses came rushing back at once. I gasped, bolting upright as the breath hit my lungs. Eyes wide, I clawed at Rhodes as he lifted me into him. He wrapped his arms around me. He was kissing my hair. He was saying something. What was he saying? Nothing made sense. My head. I reached up, fingering a tender spot on the back of my skull. My hand was wet. Blood. Dale was on the ground. A woman stood over him. She had a gun. Who was she? Dale's laugh was the first sound to truly register. It broke through the fog, and it was as if I was hearing it for the first time. You, he seethed. Well, well, look who's risen from the dead. His mouth was bleeding, staining his teeth as he smiled up at us. The woman still had her gun trained on him. All I could see was the back of her head. She had short brown hair and a dove tattoo on the back of her neck. You would love for me to be dead, wouldn't you? Her voice was sweet but firm. Her hand shook just slightly as she readjusted her grip on the gun. Dale laughed again. You going to shoot me, sweetheart? Go ahead. I'd just love to see your pretty little ass thrown in jail. Lana, don't. Rhodes warned as the woman's finger wavered on the trigger. I gasped. Lana? Her eyes flicked to mine, but all I saw was Rhodes. She looked just like him. Same green eyes, same strong jaw, same bent brow. Eyeing Rhodes' arms around me for just a moment, she snapped her attention back to Dale. As much as I'd love to be the one to kill you, I'd rather see you rot in prison. Dale laughed harder and Rhodes lurched forward. Lana held out one arm to stop him. I knew more than anyone that he could have easily plowed through her, but he didn't. I don't know what you don't get about this situation, sweetheart. I'm Dale Paxton. This is Paxton Beach. I own this fucking town.
I've been gathering witnesses. I have 14 girls willing to testify against you.
And I've got 3 highly respected doctors who will diagnose every single one of them with some form of mental instability.
He argued, not even fazed in the slightest. He lifted himself from the ground, still sitting but leaning back against the wall.
It's my word against yours, and theirs. Sexual assault is one of the hardest crimes to prove, baby. And let me assure you, I'm the only one who comes out a winner in the end.
I watched as Lana's face crumbled. Rhodes lurched forward again.
You motherfucking son of a bitch!
Lana didn't stop him this time, and I watched as his fist connected with Dale's jaw. His face flew to the left with a loud crack, blood spurting from his mouth and painting the wall behind him.
It's okay.
Lana tried to soothe Rhodes, but she didn't seem sure of herself.
Phil will know what to do. We have the witnesses. We can do this.
Who the fuck is Phil?
Dale asked.
Not every cop on your squad is crooked.
Rhodes spat at him. His eyes connected with mine and recognition hit. Officer Martino. Dale shook his head, thumbing the fresh wound on his lower lip and chuckling at the blood.
Again, no evidence.
He shook his head, still smiling.
I knew you were still out there. One by one, girls I had an eye on for so long kept disappearing, moving away. None of them went to the cops, but I knew there was something going on, and I just had a feeling it was you.
His eyes were so dark, so venomous.
You drove me to drink pretty hard this summer, little girl. But let me just remind you, you've got one cop and 15 mentally unstable girls against a man whose family has owned this town since it was founded. Who do you think comes out on top, baby cakes?
I cringed at his pet name for Lana. She fired off something else, but I didn't hear it, because an idea of my own set my heart racing again. Thumbing through the settings on my watch, I ended the voice recording and used my finger to slide the playback option. When I hit play, the yelling in the room ceased.
It's just amazing. You were always pretty, but he made you.
A rustling noise.
Let's just say I can see why he was so quick to claim you as his own.
I shivered at the replay and slid the playback further. Rhodes' eyes were wild as recognition hit. He heard what Dale had said to me, and he laid into him again, his fist rearing back before connecting again and again, but I screamed at him to stop. Just wait! I hit play again. Dale was now bleeding from one eye, too.
I've been gathering witnesses. I have 14 girls willing to testify against you. And I've got 3 highly respected doctors who will diagnose every single one of them with some form of mental instability. It's my word against yours, and theirs. Sexual assault is one of the hardest crimes to prove, baby. And let me assure you, I'm the only one who comes out a winner in the end.
Dale's voice was soft, but I could still make it out. My nose flared as I held the watch higher. Let's see you try to refute that in court. Lana's eyes glossed over, a smile spreading on her face. Red and blue lights broke through the dark foyer and sirens surrounded us. I watched the lights play off the horrified look on Dale's face as cops burst through our front door that had already been broken down. Oh my God! My mom's voice rang from the stairs. She flew down them, hugging her nightgown tightly to her body, her bright blonde hair in disarray. What the hell is going on?
Dale Paxton, you're under arrest for the sexual assault of Lana Rhodes, an officer said as he forced cuffs on Dale's wrists.
Dale laughed at him, but the cop was clearly not amused as he continued reading his Miranda rights. Lana eyed him with disbelief just as Officer Martino slid up beside her. She jumped into his arms, hugging him tight.
I don't understand, she breathed, pulling back to face him.
What, you think I'm the only good cop in the Paxton Beach Police Department?
He smiled crookedly at her, and she gazed up at him like he was her hero. I realized that, for all I knew, he might have been.
What are you doing? Let him go!
My mom chased after the cops as they hauled Dale out of the house, still reading his rights along the way. We all followed them outside, though Rhodes had to support me as I walked. I was shaking so violently I couldn't stand on my own. The scene in the yard was so surreal. I should have been focused on Rhodes' arms around me or Lana's face as she smiled through the tears of happiness in her eyes. I should have run to my mom to explain what happened, except I didn't really know myself. I wish I remembered what it felt like to be safe again in that moment, but I don't. I remember the lights. I remember I wanted to photograph him, the way the red and blue splashed across his cold, emotionless face. But I knew even if my feet could move from the place where they had cemented themselves to the ground and I could run for my camera, I wouldn't be able to capture that moment. There was no shutter speed, no lens, no lighting technique that could properly encapsulate everything I felt as I stared into his eyes. I had trusted him, I had loved him, and even though my body had changed that summer, he'd made sure to help me hold on to who I was inside, regardless of how the exterior altered. But then, everything changed. He stole my innocence. He scarred my heart. He took everything I thought I knew about my life and fast-pitched it out the window, shattering the glass that held my world together in the process. I remember the lights. The passionate, desperate, hot strikes of red, the harsh, cruel, icy bolts of blue. They symbolized everything I endured that summer, and everything I would never face again. I squeezed my eyes shut as if it were the lights that had attacked me and not Dale. Rhodes pulled me closer and I buried my face into his chest.
I trusted him, I choked out.
I know you did, Bug.
He ran his rough hands through my hair, trying but failing to soothe me.
"It hurts," I groaned, clutching at my heart through the thin fabric of my tank top.
My chest burned, like acid was slowly leaking between my ribs. Fresh tear fell in lines down my cheeks in the same course as those before them.
"It physically hurts so bad. Why does it hurt?"
Rhodes sighed, holding me tighter. He held me as close to him as he could, shielding me from Dale, from the lights, from the pain.
"It's weight," he said, kissing my hair. And that's when I felt it, all at once. "This is your weight."
Chapter 27. It took hours to file the police reports and get medically cleared. I had a pretty nasty gash on my head from hitting the floor when Dale smacked me, but other than that, I was just shaken up. At least, that's what the paramedic said. It seemed too simple to describe what I felt in that moment, but I was just thankful Rhodes got there when he did. I couldn't imagine what would have happened if he hadn't shown up. I didn't know what time it was when our yard finally cleared of all the cop cars. Our neighbors were still lingering in their lawns or behind their windows, phones still glued to their ears, no doubt spreading gossip through the town about Dale Paxton being tossed in the back of a police car. When the last car other than Officer Martino's pulled away, it was just him, Rhodes, Lana, Mom, and I left. We all just stared at each other, no one moving, no one really knowing what to do next.
"I think we should talk," Lana finally said, clearing her throat.
"Can we?"
She motioned toward the house and I nodded, leading us all inside.
Mom was in a zombie sort of state, her hair wild and her eyes heavy, but she brewed up a pot of coffee for all of us as we gathered around the kitchen island. Rhodes took the bar stool next to mine and pulled me close, resting his hand on my leg. He hadn't stopped touching me since Dale was hauled off. I was thankful. It seemed his touch was the only thing keeping me from losing myself.
"I don't even know where to start," Lana tried, looking to Officer Martino for help. He smiled encouragingly and rubbed her lower back.
"Why did you leave?" Rhodes asked.
His lips were pressed together, his jaw tense, but his eyes were bright green and soft. I was so confused, so lost, but I couldn't even imagine what was going through his head. His sister, who he assumed was dead just a few hours before, was now standing in my kitchen with us. Lana sighed, twisting her short brown hair around her fingers before letting it spring back into shape.
"I can't start there. It goes back further than that."
"So start from the beginning."
Lana took a moment, a pondering look on her face. It was as if she was racking her brain for the right words to say, or maybe she was pulling a memory from an ocean so deep she thought she'd never have to see it again. I sipped my coffee and eyed my mom as we waited. I wondered how she was feeling, and even though we were on weird terms, I found myself wanting to hug her.
"When I turned 18, I started interning at the Paxton Beach Law Firm. I wanted to go to law school, but it was going to take me a few years of waitressing to get enough cash saved up to even think of applying. I thought interning would be the best way to stay relevant in that downtime, and lucky for me, a spot had just opened up."
She said "lucky" sarcastically, and I knew if she could go back now, she wouldn't have applied at all. I knew Dale was on the board, obviously, being that he owns the firm, but I didn't realize he was a lawyer and that he worked on certain cases, so I was surprised and excited, to say the least, when I was assigned to the case he was working on at the time. I noticed Mom sniffle at the mention of Dale, but she just continued stirring her coffee.
"I remember when you started there," Rhodes said. "You would go to school all day, then intern and sometimes serve after."
He shook his head.
"I was so impressed."
"It was important to me. And Dale made me feel like I was special, like I was one of a kind. At first, it was normal, nothing alarming. He coached me, he was a good instructor. A lot of the interns got stuck pushing paperwork, but he always asked me questions and made me think. He trusted me, and I trusted him."
She swallowed.
"One night, he asked me to stay late with him to wrap up paperwork on a case. I felt honored. He hadn't even asked any of the partners to stay. But that was the night that changed my life."
"Oh, God,"
Mom whispered, her trembling fingertips touching her lips. Lana's face was pale, and I could see her arm shaking a bit. Officer Martino squeezed her hip to let her know he was there. When he was finished with me, he threatened me. He said if I told anyone, I would be fired from my internship and blackballed from every college within a 5-state distance. He said if I worked with him, he could make all of my dreams come true, but I had to be willing to give him something in return. I shuddered at the similarity between those words and the ones he'd said to me earlier. So, naturally, because I'm a Rhodes, I told him to go fuck himself. Told him I would report him to the cops, even though he said I'd never win. I tried to force a smile because that did sound like a Rhodes thing to do, but I wasn't sure if one actually appeared. That only fueled his anger, so he went after what he knew was the most important thing in the world to me, the only way he knew he could get me to keep my mouth shut. Her eyes found Rhodes and her nose flared. He said he'd kill you. Rhodes shook his head.
Why didn't you just fucking tell me? I would have killed him, Lana.
That's just it, she said. Either he would have killed you or you would have killed him and ended up in prison for the rest of your life. Both scenarios meant me losing you forever. Rhodes bit his tongue, but his grip tightened on my leg. I was your twin sister, William, and everyone who was supposed to care for you in your life had failed. I couldn't be the next one. She paused for a moment. So I did what I had to do. I just needed time to make a plan, but in the meantime, I played his game. Officer Martino and Rhodes both ground their teeth at that. But every time he assaulted me, it got worse and worse. He started leaving bruises, marks that were calling attention from you.
I thought you had an asshole boyfriend, Rhodes said. I was trying to find out who it was so I could pummel the little fuck.
And you were asking me questions, too many questions. I knew it was only a matter of time before you found out and went after Dale. I couldn't take that chance. I refused to lose you to some monster. She swallowed. So I left. I felt Rhodes' arms go slack next to me, and I found his hand, squeezing it with my own. I was still shaking, still broken from the night, but I tried to be his strength.
So you've been hiding out ever since? I asked.
She laughed a little. I wish it were that easy. The first night I was gone, I stayed in a hotel under a fake name, paid with cash. But when I went out to get food, I came back to a trashed room, all of my belongings gone or ripped to shreds. It was Dale. He wasn't going to let me leave. I didn't know where to go, but I knew I couldn't stay there, so I just started walking. I packed the blanket off the hotel bed and a pillow, and I just walked. That's when I found the boatyard.
So that's why we found your bracelet there, I breathed.
Lana nodded. It must have snagged on one of the boat lifts when I left. I stayed there for 2 weeks. I was trying to lay low, figure out my next move, but I was scared. Dale's crooked-ass cops had already raided 2 nearby hotels, and I felt them getting closer. I barely ate. I was dehydrated. I was scarred and depressed and terrified.
And that's when I found her,
Officer Martino said, pulling her a little closer. She smiled up into his dark eyes, and he brushed her hair from behind her ear. That's when he found me.
Where did you go?
Mom asked. I had almost forgotten she was in the room. Phil took me to his place. He lives alone about 20 miles out of town, never has friends over since his place is so far and everyone else lives close to the station. It was easy enough to hide me, though we had a few close calls. He fed me, got me back to health, and I confided in him. He knew about Dale, and though I had a hunch, he confirmed that I wasn't the first girl this had happened to. A small cry escaped Mom's lips. I turned to her again, a sick realization settling in.
Did you know about this? I asked, my face twisted in disgust. Is this his addiction, Mom?
I knew he was addicted to sex, she said with a cough. He cheated on me, that much I knew. I didn't realize it was with, oh, God. She shook her head, covering her mouth with both hands as she squeezed her eyes tight.
It's okay, Lana soothed her. Trust me, Dale was good at covering his tracks. His cop and doctor friends were practically the only ones who knew, and he paid them very, very well to keep it that way.
I feel responsible. I'm his wife. I should have known.
It's not your fault. You're not him, Mrs. Poxton.
Mom squeezed her eyes tighter and shook her head at her own last name. It was no longer a name of privilege. It was tainted, disgraced.
So you just stayed holed up in his house for 3 years?
Rhodes asked, snapping us back to the story.
Phil and his partner were sick of Dale's shit, but anyone who stood up to him was quickly fired and left without any other possible job prospects. Dale wasn't afraid to exude his power, so they kept the peace at work, did what they had to do to fly under the radar, but secretly they helped me find other girls who had been through what I had. We started with old police reports, tracked down the girls, found other girls through them. It was a chain of discovery. A painful one, but one that we slowly unraveled until we had a solid case.
We didn't even want to try to go after him with anything less than 10 credible victims, Officer Martino explained. And we were stuck at 7 for 2 years.
Until about a month ago when 7 other girls showed up at Phil's house, saying they heard it was a safe haven. They had all been living by Dale's rules, but word slowly spread about what we were doing. She looked to Mom. I think that's why Dale started acting crazy. He was losing it. He knew we were up to something. He just didn't know what.
Mom squeezed her eyes tight, and I thought back through the summer of hell she'd endured. Suddenly, it all made sense. Maybe she didn't want to tell me what was going on with Dale because she truly didn't know herself.
Lana shrugged. Once they came to us, we knew we had enough, and that's when we started planning our move.
Why didn't you call me? Leave a note? Let me know you were alive.
Lana swallowed, her eyes glossing over. I wanted to, William. I hated leaving you behind, watching you suffer, watching you worry. But Dale was watching you, too. The private detective you were paying was one of his crooked cops. He was keeping tabs on you, making you believe I was being looked for when I wasn't. He was exerting control over the situation by stunting you and at the same time warning me. It's as if he was letting me know how easy it would be for him to end you. She shook her head. Dale was acting crazy the more girls disappeared. I listened to girl after girl tell me the horror stories about their families or boyfriends being killed in freak accidents. I didn't want you to be next.
He killed people? Mom and I asked at the same time. The horror on her face matched what I felt in my gut, but I wasn't sure if I was showing any emotion.
Lana swallowed, her brows bending in sympathy for our ignorance. He didn't know, but he had them taken care of by others.
Mom sobbed, and I covered my mouth with my hand, my stomach sinking even lower as chills broke out on my arms.
But she still looked after you and made sure I did, too,
Officer Martino said, bringing our attention back to the story.
I know it feels like she abandoned you, but I had to fight her every night to get her to stay away. You were the only thing that matters to her, William. She wanted you safe.
But I'm supposed to be the one who protects her,
he said, his voice shaky. I gripped his hand tighter.
This was something I had to do on my own, William. It was messy, and involving you would have only made the situation worse.
But you did leave him a note, I pointed out. Shifting uncomfortably on my bar stool, I dropped my head. The one about me.
Officer Martino's face hardened and Lana cringed.
I'm so sorry, Natalie. You weren't the only one I hurt with that note. I seriously put myself and our entire investigation at risk, but I couldn't help it. She sighed. I always checked in on William, and when I found out he was your trainer, I was already wary. But one night, you left his house late, and I watched him run out after you had already peeled away. He was standing there with his hands on his head and this look on his face. I knew right then that he was falling for you, and all those red flags flew up in my head. You were Dale's daughter. Dale wanted to kill William. I felt like I had to warn him.
Even though I made her swear to me that she wouldn't, Officer Martino muttered through clenched teeth.
He did. And I begged him to let me reach out to you, but he refused. We were so close, we just needed a little more time. But I couldn't take it. I snuck out of his house and went back to the boatyard with a bottle of whiskey I stole from under a sink. She eyed where Mom's hands were gripped around her coffee mug. I don't know, I was just so unstable, so afraid of what would happen. For a while, I just sat there, wondering if everything I did up until that point was right. I was drinking, I was emotional, and by the end of the night, I decided I couldn't just sit back anymore. So I wrote that note. I thought I tore the bottom off completely. I figured there was no way he would figure out where it came from.
When I found you two trespassing, I discovered she didn't keep her promise to me, Officer Martino added. I had already radioed in the call when I realized who you two were. By that time, it was too late. They had already called Dale.
My head was spinning. Pinching the bridge of my nose, I tried to make sense of everything. I still don't understand tonight. How did you know he would... that Dale would... I couldn't even finish my sentence.
We didn't, Rhodes said, rubbing my hand still clasped in his. Right after I ended the call with you, Lana showed up at my door.
He paused, his face as white as if he were still seeing Lana as a ghost.
She was trying to tell me the same story about Dale, about why she left, about finally being able to come back now that she had a case. She wanted me to come away with her to finish what she'd started. She was ready. She was talking so fast, but I couldn't really grasp anything because all I knew was that you were late. You should have been at my place by then. I don't know.
His voice trailed off.
I can't explain it. I just felt it. I knew something was wrong. Then I tried calling you, and your phone went straight to voicemail.
It was then I realized that I had left my phone upstairs after my shower.
We took my bike, got here as fast as we could, and I heard you screaming from the driveway.
His jaw ticked, and he clenched the fist, not holding mine.
I didn't know what to expect when I broke through the door.
My mom cried, and I just stared at the still broken door he was referring to. It was all too much. I couldn't wrap my mind around the information dump we'd just experienced. All the pain Rhodes had experienced in the past 3.5 years was because of my stepdad. The same stepdad who I'd grown up loving, trusting, idolizing. I wanted to be like him. The thought now made me sick, and I lurched forward off my bar stool, reaching the sink just in time to lose what little food and coffee I had left in my system. Rhodes rushed to my side, pulling my hair back and rubbing my back.
I know this is a lot, Officer Martino said softly. I think we all need a night to just process everything. Mrs. Paxton, you should get some rest.
I'm not feeling very well either, Lana said, leaning her weight on his shoulder.
Come on, let me take you home. Wait.
Rhodes made sure I was okay as I turned to face the room again. He offered me a cup of water, and I took it gratefully as he crossed the room to his sister. For a moment, they stared at one another, and the rest of us stared at how similar they looked. Rhodes pulled her into him, crushing her with a hug so fierce, so strong, built from more than 3 years of loss and given with a sigh of relief. She squeezed her eyes tight, tears sliding through the creases of her skin as she buried her face into his shoulder. I love you, William. I'm so sorry I left you. I'm so sorry about everything.
Don't.
He stopped her.
You're alive. You're here. That's all I care about.
They held each other a while longer before Rhodes finally pulled back, letting Officer Martino escort Lana outside. We all promised to meet up for a late lunch the next day to talk more. There was a lot to do now that Dale was in jail and witnesses were gathered, and we all knew they wouldn't hold him long. He would likely post bail in the morning. We wouldn't truly be free of him until after the trial. Rhodes and I packed up bags for my mom and myself, grabbing everything we thought we'd need. We had no way of knowing if or when Dale would return, but we did know it wouldn't be safe for any of us to stay in the house. Mom was a complete mess. She had stopped talking, and Rhodes had to carry her out to the Rover. We drove in silence to his house, Rhodes following behind us on his bike. When we got to Rhodes' apartment, he waited in the kitchen as I laid Mom down in his bed. She was shaking slightly, so I pulled the covers up to her chin. I'm so sorry, baby, she whispered, fresh tears brimming her eyes before falling to the sheets. I didn't know. I thought our issues were between us, a cheating husband, a faithful wife. I never knew. I never would have imagined. I know, Mom. It's not your fault. She squeezed her eyes tight, fighting back a sob. But it is. I brought you up in the same household as a monster. I put you in danger. He could have... Oh, God, baby, I'm so sorry. She reached out for me and I hugged her fiercely, shaking my head against her. You didn't know, Mom. It's not your fault. I'm okay. We're okay. She cried and I held her, trying to be the support she needed while still battling with the night on my own. After a while, her cry softened and she closed her eyes, resting back against Rhodes' pillows. I brought her a glass of water and set it on the bedside table before quietly shutting the bedroom door behind me and rejoining Rhodes in the kitchen. We looked at each other for what felt like the first time that night.
"Can we go somewhere?" Rhodes didn't answer, only grabbed the keys to his bike.
I called Christina, telling her what I could about what happened and asking her to go to Rhodes' place to keep an eye on Mom. I hoped she would sleep, but just in case, I didn't want her to be alone. The sun was on the horizon as we drove toward the beach. Rhodes parked his bike in one of Dale's reserved spots and held my hand as we made our way to the water. I fell down into the sand right at the water's edge, and Rhodes slowly maneuvered himself down to sit next to me.
"I would give every last penny in my savings account to know what you're thinking right now,"
he whispered over the waves. His eyes were on me. Mine were on the soft yellows and blues of the sunrise over the ocean. "My stepdad is the reason you've spent the last 3 years of your life in absolute hell," I said. "I'm tied to the biggest pain in your life. I can't believe I never saw him for what he was. I can't believe I trusted him. I loved him. I thought he loved me." My voice broke a little, but I cleared my throat. I refused to shed any more tears over Dale Paxton.
"Bug, he was the reason for what happened to Lana. To me, not you."
"Are you okay?" I asked, turning to face him. I didn't want to talk about Dale anymore.
"Honestly, no,"
he answered. His bright green eyes were tinged a sort of aqua with the blue of the sky playing in them.
"But I think I will be. I'm more worried about you at the moment."
"Me?" He nodded. "I'm fine. Shaken up was my diagnosis," I joked. Rhodes didn't return my smile.
"What happened to you tonight was serious, Natalie."
"It didn't happen. You saved me." He swallowed.
"Even still, I wasn't there to stop him from hitting you or saying what I can only imagine were words you'll never forget."
An ache squeezed around my heart and I clutched at the fabric of my tank top. Rhodes pulled me into him, kissing my hair. "I think I'll be okay, too," I finally whispered into his chest.
"Maybe we both will be."
I sniffed. "Are you really leaving?" Rhodes sighed, tilting my chin up to look into my eyes.
"Not without you."
He captured my lips with his own, promises dancing between us in the morning light. I tangled my fingers in his hair and he held me tighter, deepening our kiss. Neither of us had any idea where we went from that moment, but finally, and without any doubt, we knew we'd never face whatever it was without the other.
"I love you,"
he whispered against my lips.
"I don't want you to think I'm saying it now because of what happened tonight. I've felt it for weeks, maybe longer. I should have said it when you said it, or hell, before then. You said it hit you all at once, but I felt every single inch of the fall. I tried so hard to fight it, to not let myself be selfish enough to love you, knowing who I am and what I'm capable of."
"Stop," I breathed, kissing him again. "I know. You never had to say it." He frowned, his eyes on mine.
"Well, now I'm never going to stop."
I smiled against his mouth as he kissed me again, harder this time, with promise and purpose, greed and carefulness. His brows knitted together, and I wondered if he'd ever be able to kiss me without feeling like he didn't deserve to. "I love you too, William," I said softly. He pulled back, his eyes questioning the name. He opened his mouth to argue, but after a pause, simply closed it once more. Because he knew then what I had known all along. He was my resolute protector now. Sliding his hand into mine, he pressed two fingers firmly against my inner wrist. I felt my heartbeat pound beneath his touch, and I moved my fingers to mirror his own. My heart was racing, but his was slow and steady. Soon, they evened out, beating as one together. William pressed his forehead to mine, and I inhaled the first breath of my new life. That summer had changed me in more ways than I could even understand. I had challenged myself and found strength I didn't know I had. I'd taken risks, risks that led to a passion and love unlike anything I'd experienced before. And yes, I had lost an innocence that up until that point had played a huge role in who I was. But in the end, I'd emerged on the other side of summer, ready to shed my leaves along with the fall trees. The truth was, William had brought a sleeping giant to life. I felt a new me, a better me, waiting just below the surface for her chance to shine in the spring. I didn't shield my eyes as the morning light grew brighter and brighter on the beach around us. I simply held on tighter to the one person whose darkness offered the perfect balance. The sun was rising, and we were rising with it. Epilogue. 2 years later. I smooth my hands down the thin black fabric of my dress, turning to inspect myself in the mirror once more. My new, shorter, brighter blonde hair was slightly curled, and it framed my face at the chin. There were no lumps showing beneath the tight dress. Still, I stretched it and smoothed it over and over again.
"You look perfect."
William's deep voice echoed through our bedroom as he slid up behind me, wrapping his arms around my middle. "I think it's too small," a smirk curved on his lips.
"Just because it's a single digit doesn't mean it's too small, Bug."
He kissed my temple and I turned in his arms, running my hands up his biceps currently covered by a blazer. "I don't think I'll ever get used to a size 8. I guess I have you to thank for that."
"Don't thank me,"
he said, kissing my nose.
"Thank the squats."
I giggled.
"Ready?"
Licking my lower lip, I slid my hands down his chest and hooked them into the band of his dress pants. He inhaled a stiff breath and I felt him grow hard through the fabric. "Are you sure we have to leave the house?" He groaned, running his hands back through my hair and tugging it gently, forcing my face up to his. He pressed his lips against mine and bit the lower lip I'd just licked to tease him.
"Go ahead, tease me all you want tonight, Bug. Just remember that later when I pay you back."
His words sent a jolt straight between my legs and my thighs tensed. William didn't break the kiss, though. He deepened it, running his rough hands down the open back of my dress to firmly palm my ass. I moaned into his mouth and he finally pulled away, leaving me panting for more. "Looking forward to it," I said, breathless. I went to steal another kiss, but Zipper ran between our legs, tail wagging furiously, knocking both of us back a step. "What do you say, Zip? You going to be good while we're gone?" Our rough-around-the-edges pit bull sat down quickly, planting his front feet and looking up at us with wide eyes and tongue flopped out. I rubbed the white spot on his head before leaning down to kiss his nose, to which he responded with a sneeze and another sprint through the house. We rescued Zipper last Christmas, and he'd been a part of our little dysfunctional family ever since. He was hyper, got into trouble more days than not, and I'd lost count of how many pairs of shoes had fallen victim to his chewing habit. Still, he reminded me a lot of Rhodes when we first met. People were scared of him, he seemed dangerous, but inside he was kind and caring and brave. One more week in the shelter and he would have been put down. Some say we saved him, but I think it might be the other way around. Where therapy failed over the last few months, Zipper had succeeded. He ran through the house full speed, using the front door as a backboard before bounding back toward us. William chuckled, watching Zipper run another lap, before smacking my ass playfully as he motioned toward the door. If it weren't such an important dinner, I likely would have continued my teasing until he gave up and let me stay home with him. As it was, we were expected to meet with his sister and my mom, neither of whom we saw much of anymore. The drive to the restaurant was short, but I stared out the window the entire time. Even though we'd lived in Savannah for over a year, I still marveled at how beautiful the town was. There was so much history, but more than that, life. Every square of the city buzzed with beauty and excitement. Still, any time I was quiet, the noise in my head would creep in. I'd come a long way in the 2 years since everything happened, but I wasn't sure I'd ever truly move on and forget. Therapy had helped, in the beginning at least, but I realized after a while that the only person I wanted to talk to about everything was William. He knew me better than I even knew myself. And so we leaned on each other, in the good times and the bad, and our foundation that had once been cracked and breaking was rebuilt slowly and steadily. It was stronger than ever now. William's hand gently squeezing my knee brought my attention back inside the car. He knew when I drifted, but just feeling his skin on mine would bring me back to the moment, back to him.
"I have some exciting news."
I arched a brow. "Yeah?"
He nodded, the cutest smirk quirking at the corner of his lips.
I applied for a summer job a while back. I didn't say anything to you because I figured with all the competition at school, I probably wouldn't get it. But, well, I did.
I smiled, wrinkling my nose.
And what are you doing?
William chewed his lip.
You know how Bradley Shoemaker from Food Network is the guest chef at that little Italian restaurant downtown?
Oh my God, are you... He nodded again, this time a huge smile lighting up his face. It was the kind that still had the power to knock the breath from my chest.
I'm going to be one of his cooks.
William! I wrapped my hand around the one he had on my knee and squeezed. That's amazing. I shook my head, overwhelmed with pride. The man I'd met that summer 2 years ago had absolutely zero confidence in his cooking. The man beside me now was almost finished with his culinary degree and was going to be cooking all summer with one of the hottest chefs in the industry. He shrugged.
Just trying to keep up with my all-star girlfriend.
I hardly think working at the art museum qualifies as all-star or compares to what you'll be doing in any way.
They're asking you to curate and you're still in school, Bug. And your photos are the first to sell any time you let them display them. Stop selling yourself short.
I blushed. Confidence is still a work in progress for me.
I know. That's why I'm always here to remind you.
He threw me a wink just as we pulled into the quaint seafood restaurant where Mom had asked us to meet her and Lana. William parked our small Camry and ran around to open my door, extending one hand to help me out. It wasn't the Rover or a Corvette, but it was ours. We had both worked hard for it. And for that reason alone, I was proud every time I rode inside it. I couldn't help but stare at William as we walked toward the front door. His chestnut hair was carefully styled, his suit crisp, and the slight stubble on his chin made it look like he didn't even try too hard to look that way. His bright green eyes were happy, the happiest I'd ever seen them. He hardly ever scowled anymore, the expression so rare that I almost forgot what it looked like at all. Nowadays, he almost always wore the most comfortable smile. It completed his outfit. Before we'd even reached the table, Mom was up and out of her seat, wrapping me in a crushing hug. I embraced her, laughing a little when she pulled back, swiping at the wetness on her cheeks.
Oh, heavens, I've missed you so much, sweetie.
I've missed you too, Mom. She looked good, incredible, actually. Her long blonde hair was tied up into an elegant updo, and her eyes were free from the dark circles they'd worn for so long after the incident with Dale. She seemed to be happy. I hope she truly was.
No, but really, she's missed you. I think I know your whole life now. She talks about you every night, Lana said with a smile, wrapping me in a light hug. Good to see you, Natalie. You look amazing.
Thank you. So do you. We shared a smile before taking our seats at the table. A waiter placed our napkins in our lap and left us with menus after we placed our drink order. So how was today's tour stop? I asked, eyeing Lana as she texted away on her phone. A smile was plastered on her face, and I didn't need more than one guess as to who she was texting. She and Officer Martino had been shy about their relationship at first, unsure of it just like Rhodes and I in the beginning, but there was no denying it now.
So good, Mom answered. I feel like we're really making a difference in some of these young ladies' lives. It feels like, while we're speaking, I look out at them and I can tell which ones have gone through something. I can't explain it, but you can see it in their eyes. They're listening. They want to know their options.
It's terrifying in a way, Lana added, tucking her phone back into her clutch.
Mom nodded. It is, but that's what reminds me why we do this.
They shared a knowing smile, and William found my hand under the table, giving it a soft squeeze. After the trial, Lana and Mom became really close. It was interesting since they were on two very opposite sides of what happened with Dale, but they really seemed to help each other cope. They decided to write a book together, and mostly because of the popularity of Dale's case nationwide, it sold tremendously. Now, they were booked through December with tour stops all over the country speaking to high schools, colleges, women's groups, and more. They were signing and selling books and telling their story, giving other women hope and strength to fight their own situations. It was actually quite incredible.
How have you two been? How's school?
William told him about his new summer job, and I filled them in on the latest projects at the museum.
It was finals week at school, and I was going to take the summer off to focus on curating and honing in on my own skills. I was looking forward to the months off, especially since it meant more time with William.
Is Willow still coming to visit you this summer?
I grinned. Yeah, she flies in next week. She's supposedly bringing her flavor of the semester with her, so this should be interesting. Willow was the only friend I still kept in contact with from Paxton Beach. Mason had checked on me after everything happened, but once he left for college and I left for Savannah, we lost contact completely. In a way, I preferred it like that. Paxton Beach was in my past, just where I wanted it. Mom and William laughed as the waiter refilled our glasses. Lifting hers high in the air, Mom cleared her throat. "A toast," she said. We all lifted our glasses to join hers in unison. "To survival, and healing, and family." "Cheers," we all sang together. I clinked my glass with Lana's and Mom's first before ending with William's. He held my gaze for a moment, and his eyes spoke more words than any toast ever could. The love I felt from those two jade irises astounded me sometimes. As we sipped from our glasses, I couldn't help but think about all the amazing things that had come from such a horrific experience. Dale was finally paying for the pain he'd caused so many women to suffer. William had his sister back in his life. My mom had finally found something she was passionate about, and I was following a dream I'd had no confidence in before. Maybe everything really does happen for a reason. I thought about that more as we drove home, the radio playing softly as William ran his thumb along the bare skin on my knee. We were both quiet, reflective, and I realized that in a way, I kind of had Mason to thank for bringing me to him. If he hadn't been my first boyfriend, my first heartbreak, I may have never found the courage or the motivation to take that first step into the Paxton Beach Country Club, and I surely never would have known what waited for me behind its doors. Or rather, who? Zipper jumped on me as soon as William unlocked the door to our apartment. His large paws connected with my shoulders, and I braced myself against the wall in the foyer, kicking off my heels as he licked my face. This was our routine, and it always made me smile. "Hey, Zip. Missed you too, bud." He dropped back down to the floor and sat, patiently waiting as William shrugged off his suit jacket and slung it over one of our dining room chairs before grabbing Zipper's leash.
"I'm going to walk him real quick, and I'll be back,"
he said, leaning in to kiss my cheek. He lingered there for just a moment, kissing up to my ear before whispering,
"Don't get too undressed before I get back."
I shivered, biting my lip as he pulled back with a wink and led Zipper out the door. Tossing my clutch on the kitchen table, I grabbed my heels off the floor and slowly walked back to our bedroom, stomach full and eyes heavy from the night. I trailed my fingers along the wall of photos that lined the hallway, each frame filled with a memory of William and I. The first photo we'd ever taken together was there, the one we'd snapped that evening after he took me for the first time. It sat in the middle, surrounded by new memories, everything from our lazy Sunday picnics in the park and sweaty after-gym selfies to dressed-up nights at the gallery and adventures with Zipper. A smile tugged at my lips as I dropped my heels into the bottom of our closet and unfastened my earrings. I didn't even get the second one out before I heard the front door open and close, followed by a stampede of paws as Zipper ran wild once again. I tossed his bone onto his bed near the foot of ours, and he flopped down happily, gnawing away with his tail wagging.
"Let me help with that," William murmured, sliding up behind me before moving the hair off my neck.
His hand found the zipper at the back of my dress, and he slowly guided it down, planting small kisses on my neck as he trailed it lower. I slipped out of the fabric, letting it hit the floor before turning and hooking my arms around his neck. William's eyes raked over me slowly, and he shook his head.
"You're so beautiful."
I smiled. "Thank you." I didn't have to fight hard to believe him anymore. I half expected him to take me right then and there, but he let me go long enough for each of us to dress in our pajamas before we crawled between our sheets. Only William's bedside lamp illuminated the room as he propped himself on one elbow, eyes pensive. "What are you thinking about over there?" I asked, quirking a brow. He ran his free hand through my hair with a lazy grin before swallowing hard.
"I got you something."
He rolled, opening the small drawer on his bedside table before shutting it again softly. When he turned back to me, he held a box I recognized, the one my watch had come in when he gave it to me 2 years ago at the club. "You know my watch still works, right?" I asked with a smile, propping myself up against the pillows. "I just ran the battery down.
again. William held the box out anyway, and I took it, eyeing him curiously as I opened it. When I looked down again, it wasn't a watch at all. "Oh my God," I breathed, eyes snapping to William. "What is this?" It was a stupid question because I knew what it was. It was a ring, a beautiful ring, slender and gold, with an eternity symbol that linked two tiny hearts together. My eyes flicked between it and William over and over.
"It's a promise," he finally said, reaching out to grab the box from my shaking hands.
He removed the ring, setting the box to the side before his eyes found mine again.
"That I'm here, that I'll always be here, through your dark times and your light, shouldering whatever weight you can't carry on your own. It's a promise that I'll always help you to feel beautiful when you don't on your own, that I'll hold you when you need to cry and spin you in my arms when you need to celebrate."
We both laughed a little, tears brimming my eyes at the memory of him doing just that in the middle of the gym the day I hit my goal weight.
"And one day, when we're ready, I'll replace it with a ring that promises forever. Even though you don't need it, not really. Because the truth is, you had me since the day we met, and you already have my forever, if you want it."
He held the ring out, eyes on mine, waiting, but I didn't hesitate. I extended my hand, fingers spread wide, and he slipped it over the knuckle of the ring finger on my right hand with a sigh. "Do you even have to ask?" I slid my hand into his, index finger pressing on the small tattooed circle on the inside of my wrist. He did the same, finding the matching circle on my wrist, as I whispered what we both knew all along. "I want all of you, William." He answered me with a kiss, his hands finding my hair as he rolled over, my thighs framing his strong middle as he pressed me into the sheets. Sometimes he still kissed me like it hurt him, like he was afraid he'd hurt me, and this was one of those times. But eventually, the crease between his brows faded, each new touch and kiss erasing it slowly. He kissed me until I felt beautiful, and I kissed him until he felt worthy, and we never cared how long it took us to get there. I've always hated weight. Before I met William, I hated the weight that crowded my body, making me feel inadequate in every aspect of my life. Then, when I first started training with him, he pushed me harder than anyone ever had. Whenever I thought I was finally rising to meet his standards, he would add more weight to my set, making me work harder, forcing me to find the motivation to push through. And maybe that's the thing about weight. Though it hurts when we feel its added pressure in our lives, it only makes us stronger in the end. Looking at William now, I couldn't imagine him without the weight that had shaped him. His past had made him into the man I loved, no matter how scarred. He was the man who fixed me, who changed me, and who helped me carry my own weight when it grew too heavy to handle on my own. I was beginning to realize that weight really wasn't a bad thing after all.
Acknowledgements. This is always the hardest part because the truth is there are too many people in my life to thank for getting me to where I am today in my writing journey. I'd love nothing more than to just gather all of you around a fire with a cooler full of beer and tell you how much I love you, but for now, a few sentences will have to do. Ryan, aka Hubs, aka Hot Bearded Man Who Keeps Me Going When It Feels Impossible to Do. Thank you for being my William, my never-ending stream of support, the trainer in my ear telling me I can do it. Thanks for the late-night dinners and foiled weekend plans when writing deadlines snuck up on me. This book is the most difficult book I've written thus far, and I couldn't have done it without you. I love you. This book would have been dead and buried in an RIP file on my hard drive if it weren't for Stacy Brohart, who has become one of my very best friends in the short year we've known each other. You will forever be the hype man to my Polly Pocket, and I can never truly thank you enough for helping me elevate this book to the next level. Hashtag Juicebox Hero. Becca Hensley Mysore, you helped me build Weightless up from a tiny little outline. You saved the ending, but more than that, you saved me from crippling self-doubt. Thank you for your love and your friendship, both of which are invaluable and cherished more than you know. To my lifelong best friend, Sasha Whittington, thank you once again for reading my work in every stage along the way and helping me make it better. I've written you into every acknowledgement I've had, and I know you'll be in every single one until the day I stop writing, because you're not just my best friend, but my biggest fan, too. Now, prepare yourself. We've got a big job ahead of us with the next one. Hashtag ALLTW. A big shout-out goes out to the Circle of Trust. Erin Spencer, Cassie Graham, Ashley Davison, and Jess Vogel for beta reading, helping me choose teasers, saving me on the late nights when I felt like quitting, and always knowing how to make me laugh. I love you all so much it hurts, and I can't imagine doing this without you.